This is the Real Footy Podcast. For a season in hiatus, as the game tries to negotiate its financial survival and players and the AFL are drawn into a brawl over their pay.
Danger's a chance on his left, sizes it up, one step, and what about that from the superstar? That is sensational.
Clean for the Swans so far. This is the kick, and that's the mark to Heaney.
Her most important kick yet.
Method's got it! Unbelievable!
Wow! Lily Method, take a bow.
Gets the kick away, McDonald Tippin. Woody does something magic. And Stringer kicks the goal! Stringer's got it!
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson, and with me is Jake Nile and Caroline Wilson for what has been the worst week in Australian sport. Three football code seasons suspended, the Olympics postponed, but right now we are occupied with thoughts of AFL football. Hello and welcome, Caro.
Hi, Gleese. How are you going?
I'm well. And Jake?
Yes, I'm holding up quite well, Michael, in the sort of in the bunker like everyone else in most of our society, not just AFL people. So it's been a traumatic thing for everyone, and football is has learned, Caro, that it's not immune from what happens to everyone else. It was a sort of a bit of a lesson.
Well, everybody, it seems, has understood that lesson, except for the players. I'm sitting here talking to you two today completely flabbergasted by what I'm hearing coming out of the Players Association and from the individuals themselves. Heroes of mine like Jack Revolt and Patrick Dangerfield, for them to talk about what they did for the Bushfire Relief Fund by playing a game of football when the queue's outside the Centrelink around the corner from where I live, and Patrick Dangerfield said he has family members in those queues, for them to be talking about the good community work they do and suggest that it's fine for them to ask for some certainty about the AFL's finances before they agree to a pay cut is baffling to me. I listened to Nathan Jones, I think was on 3AW the other night, saying, we're prepared to play in December if we have to. I mean, of course they're prepared to play in December if they have to. I'm really disappointed in the players, and I think the AFL need to show leadership too by perhaps taking a bigger pay cut, those executives, and 20%, but this is something that the players won't be forgiven for a long, long time.
I think, Caro, it's also, and Gleese, you've made this point quite well, or very well. It's important not just to talk about the amount of a pay cut, but the period of time, because a pay cut for 2 months is not very significant. It's actually, did you not say, Gleese, it's an 8% pay cut that the players offer when they said they talked about 50% over a period.
But I mean, but what's so surprising to me, Gleese, is that they're demanding to know about the AFL's finances. Nobody knows how big this black hole is going to get. Nobody knows how much worse this is going to get. And everybody has acted with such immediacy, except for the AFL Players Association.
Well, the striking thing for me with that is that the people around them, they've seen the people around them, the coaches, the people in their own administration, sat down with no pay for the intervening period, and to then have the argument over, we'll give up 50% for this length of period. I get that they don't know what and how long it's going to be, but a lot of these clubs and executives are taking pay cuts that are open-ended. They're not just for the life of how long games are on for, because, look, beyond anything, it's not just where the games come back. When they come back, there will be no crowds. So revenue is massively down regardless of whether we get games in this year and broadcast money comes in this year. And, you know, as we said, for every thought there is about how much they're giving up, well, what about the people that are snaking around out of Centrelink offices and about talk of 15% unemployment? But I think that there is also, you know, okay, the AFL executive has said we'll take a 20% pay cut. 20%, that's piddling.
I have a feeling, Gleese, that when this is all over, it'll be more significant than that.
Yeah, well, Jake, it can't be when it's all over.
That's right.
It's got to be now. I mean, I think Gillen, who's shown pretty good leadership, it must be said, and seems to be doing a reasonable job in a terrible time, I think it's not at the end of all this, and, you know, Patrick Dangerfield is saying, don't judge us now, judge us at the end of all this. No, we judge you now, and Gillon, you have to say something now. I think that's what, that in the end, it's leadership that is going to come through when all is said and done. And if he says it, like we know a lot of coaches have done, and Chris Scott isn't the only coach to be taking no money over the next 2 months, a few of them are doing that, I think, and they're seeing all their assistants go home with nothing. I think that probably the exec needs to say something now as well.
I think the thing about these situations, Caro, is that the levels of sacrifice, it becomes very clear. You start with unity and then you end up in these squabbles because the levels of sacrifice are not uniform or not shared completely. So some people are just completely gone from the industry. I mean, I spoke to someone in a footy department yesterday. He said, well, I'm done. That's it. My career is probably over. I'm in terms of working in footy, I don't think I will again because of this. Now, that is in stark contrast to, I suppose, well, first of all, the players. The players, of course, are the key people, because the one thing we learn out of this situation is that there's two groups of people that the game cannot live without, and they are players and fans.
That's right. And I think the other thing is that, and we saw on the weekend how football is not football without supporters watching it. It just wasn't the same. It was clear after one night to me that the decision to play, although I applauded it at the time, was probably wrong. And it got worse when you saw the, and I know we've written about this in The Age, the images at Bondi Beach, etc., and the bad example footy set. But I say again, the players, we always suspected they lived in a bubble. I mean, even to say, you know, we're all, I think the comment from the players and their boss, Paul Marsh, they're being asked to stay fit for the next 2 months. People are shaking their heads that they would even put that forward as a negotiation point. They're being asked to stay fit. They don't have the opportunity to go out and find other work, like the footy staff have been laid off. Yes, they do. They're not able to go and find another job to stack supermarket shelves like some of our kids are doing.
Well,
I read somewhere today that the AFL isn't angry, it's frustrated. I would actually take dispute with that. I think the AFL is really angry with its players.
I think that we've got to go beyond the players too, Caro. You said the players have lived in a bubble. The game has lived in a bubble. How many industries since about 1990 have had continuous growth. And if you look at the whole way the sport views itself, this sport and this competition views itself as a growth sport. So there's no savings. The clubs don't really, clubs that are the size of Carlton and Essendon with their supporter bases don't have, Essendon have built a Taj Mahal out at Tullamarine. They felt they needed to do that. Hawthorn were going to build something at Dingley. Thankfully, that's, as you pointed out, that's been shelved for indefinitely. It may never happen now. The game has always never saved money. It's always looked to take whatever money it had. We had expansion to Gold Coast and GWS and then the AFLW. The whole philosophy of the sport has been growth rather than, there's never been a really a rainy day thing other than the Future Fund.
And that was gone in about 2 days, wasn't it? I guess the best thing the AFL did was buy Marvel Stadium. That, as they've pointed out to me this week, has probably saved the game, because at least they can borrow money on the strength of it. It's there for them to sell if they need to. It's the greatest piece of underwriting they've ever achieved. And if we do get back to playing footy, which we might talk about in a moment this year, we've got a great stadium to play it at.
Yeah, I actually don't think they've touched the Future Fund yet, and I think they're hoping not to, but they'll draw the line of credit. They've got $60 million bucks in that. That
was a euphemism that the money was gone.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I mean that I think they're trying to quarantine, which is a common word in this period, but they're quarantining that money. But they're trying to then, you know, open up the line of credit. The other thing about the whole financial uncertainty of the game is the assumption that if we get back to playing, all things start to return to normal. Nothing goes back to normal after this. The game won't go back to normal after this. Next year, if unemployment, once it reaches double digits, which it will, and the most conservative forecasts are 11%, there's talk of 15% unemployment, membership isn't likely to return to the same levels it was this year. And then you're talking about broadcast money and you're talking about sponsorship money, corporate money coming into the game. The revenues will be lower next year regardless.
Well here's another thing, Gleice, sorry to jump in. We haven't even dealt with the issue of what fans will get back and members will get back from their clubs or even AFL members. That is a huge issue that the game hasn't yet really confronted.
I don't think the members, many members, will ask for their money back. I don't think that there won't be as many members next year. But surveys, I mean, I understand things have changed for everyone, but surveys are suggesting that most people who bought memberships did so to support their footy clubs, not to go to the footy. I think that's going to be a question. There's going to be a lot of consumer issues with all club memberships around Australia, not just footy clubs. But Jake, I think, do you reckon the soft cap footy department will probably be halved next year? And I think the salary cap for players will significantly reduce as well.
Well, of course, both will. They're talking about a million straight away. So that's happening as we speak. A million off the soft cap this year. I think that's probably the bare minimum. And then next year, another 2 million on top of that. So we'd go from just under 10 million to just under 9 million this year, because a lot of things have already been paid for and a lot of people have already been paid. And then we'd go down by another 2 million. Down to under 7 million in the soft cap. The soft cap, by the way, may have saved footy too, Caro, because you just wonder what state some of these clubs would be in if they'd not put a handbrake on spending several years ago.
As it turned out, it wasn't nearly enough of a handbrake. And the AFL was blind to this too. Everybody said clubs were spending too much. Every year we start the season writing about the $100 million collective debt held by our AFL clubs, and nothing ever really changed because everybody assumed the money would keep coming in from Channel 7 and Fox Footy, and now they've stopped paying and who knows when they'll start paying again.
Well, on that, Kara, I mean, you know, nothing will change. Do you think things will change? Do you think 18 clubs survive out of this if... in the medium term, if they do in the short term because they're committed for the nine games per round for the life of this broadcast agreement, do you think the competition will sustain the 18 clubs?
No, I don't. Well, I can't say for certain that it will. I think that there is absolutely no doubt, despite the fact we're hearing, particularly from clubs like North Melbourne and St Kilda and Gold Coast, that the game has never worked so harmoniously, has never been so helpful in sharing information, everything centralised, etc. I just don't see necessarily how they can survive. And I think the AFL is angered too that the players are questioning the money put into the Gold Coast. I mean, that's been pretty horrifying. But I believe, Gleice, that mergers will come back onto the table.
Jake, do you see that as the likely outcome, a hardening of the resolve of the core clubs, the stronger clubs, to say we have to be a bit more ruthless with the competition?
Well, that everyone is saying behind the scenes, not everyone, a lot of people, there are schisms between how clubs see it. Caro is correct in the conversations I've had. It's generally the more vulnerable clubs that talk about the great unity, and some people on boards at other clubs. Well, that's true, isn't it, Caro? I mean,
it's completely true.
Yeah. And as soon as you deal with a bigger club, they sort of say, well, you know, there's not all of them, but there's people at those clubs that say, well, there isn't the money. We have a model where half of the competition really underwrites the other half. It's not lifters and leaners, as Joe Hockey quite put it. It is, of course, this gets exposed when the TV money disappears, because then clubs, there are not many clubs that are self-sustaining, and it's a very flawed model that the AFL's got and almost unique in sport.
Yeah, well, does that come back to that point, Jake, that they then turn around and say, well, hang on, we've got to be more fiscally responsible than this. We can't keep sustaining more than half of the competition making losses year on year. So there will be a point where they just say, nah, that's enough. And Caro, segueing from that, there'll be questions asked within football clubs. Well, based on that, can we afford to keep paying something like the AFLW?
I think the AFLW is a vexed one, Gleice. It would be such a big deal to knock it on its head now when it culturally and socially it's added so much to the game. Certainly the Players Association, who the AFLW people always suspected they didn't have the support from the men that they had hoped, and that's coming through loud and clear now. I just think it's added so much to the footy clubs that do have clubs. I just think what will happen, it will go back to completely a far less professional model. And not that it was fully professional anyway, but I think that they're going to have to accept that it costs so much money to put those games on. I don't think we'll be seeing people being paid money to play AFLW in the way they were this year.
I think you can forget about a whole bunch of things in footy, Gleese and Caro. There's just, you know, obviously the expansion of the AFLW is just absolutely, that's going to be gone for quite a while. That Essendon and Hawthorn can forget about teams for quite a few years. That's just a starting point, but it'll go well past that. Which club do we feel, the three of us, feel is the most vulnerable in terms of survival right now?
Well, I think you've got to say the Gold Coast. You've just got to. The issue there, of course, is that they've just built a fabulous new facility off the back of Queensland government money for the Commonwealth Games. And as we've said, the AFL wants 18 teams because they want 9 games a week. I'm really concerned for North Melbourne. I'm really concerned for St Kilda. And I think that there is, you know, we have every right to say that. And there is absolutely no doubt mergers are being looked at. I think, you know, there are so many givens in footy that wouldn't have happened if you invented footy now. And one of them is that you wouldn't have 10 teams operating out of one state. Now, is this an opportunity to reduce that to 8?
Well, Graham Samuel agenda sort of comes back, Caro. We go back, you know, 20 plus years when he called for a series of mergers. I'm not sure that I think the AFL would prefer the easier way to deal with this, which would be to sacrifice jobs in the industry than clubs. But clubs are the harder, much harder thing to do politically.
Yep.
Well, we could fill the next 3 hours talking about what the crystal ball of how miserable football could be in the future. But we'll take a break and come back and look at the 9 games that could constitute a full season in the AFL.
Do you have a question or comment for the team? Send us an email, realfootypod@theage.com.au.
No handshake. No handshakes. No, you come here, mate. Just on the edge of the circle, mate. Just joking. Yeah.
Well, welcome back. It might be all the football we get for the year, but it certainly will be all the football we get for several months. So looking back at the round that was, what did you make of football without a crowd, Jake?
Oh, it was very strange, as a number of people have said. I agree. It certainly wasn't the same. Oddly enough, I thought that the footy at Marvel Stadium and the smaller venues actually look the optics of it, just the feel of it on television was better than the MCG. The MCG is so big that when you saw it empty at Carlton Richmond, it was a bit more dispiriting. But some of the football was good. The games themselves, the standard was pretty good.
Just on that though, did you think? Is it an alibi for some of these teams that started and had a jump on them that they came out flat? I mean, you come out, there's no banner, there's no one in the stands, and it had the feel still of a practice match for a lot of them. Obviously, Carlton was jumped, and so the Bulldogs were jumped in the first quarter. Does that offer them an alibi, or were they just rubbish?
No alibi at all. The Bulldogs' performance was bitterly disappointing. I thought they... They're a team that, like many of us, we'd spoken on a podcast a week ago. I had them, you know, fourth on the ladder. It's a position that if we get a season, I wouldn't maintain. They were extremely flat and disappointing. And Collingwood, you look at it now, the more mature teams, Caro, clearly to me had a huge advantage in this season, assuming we get a season. I speak of Richmond, West Coast, Collingwood and the Giants, who looked clearly a cut above the other sides on the first round.
They did. I mean, it's a level playing field. Everyone had reason to be flat. Everyone had reason to be concerned. I think the problem with judging these teams too harshly, though, Jake, is that we often get to about round 10 and we look back to round 1 and it has absolutely no relevance. No relevance on what happens after that. But we only have one round to judge. And I agree, the Western Bulldogs, after, you know, really being monstered out of the finals last September, came back and just looked insipid. I mean, that was a real shock for me, the Western Bulldogs. Not so shocked by Melbourne. I mean, it was a tough ask for them to go over to the West. They clearly had a poor season last year, and West Coast, everybody feels, is going to be a strong side this year. Richmond, to me, looked ominous, as did Collingwood, as did GWS.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? We're coming out of that, there'll be teams that think, gee, we really want to get a season going here because we are right in the window, and there are others saying, yeah, it wouldn't be the worst thing if this season doesn't get up and going because we were horrible.
The biggest surprise to me was the Sydney Swans beating Adelaide. Sydney, I mean, Isaac Heaney was just wonderful. Luke Parker, you know, who we all think might be coming towards the end, but he looked in, or might not be the player, will never be again the player he was. I thought for them to beat Adelaide, albeit at a silent Adelaide Oval, was the big shock of round one.
Well, I think that was the one that reinforced the impact of no crowds. Adelaide don't lose that, you know, a one-kick game where they've had the lead if they're at home like that. I think that was a game that you thought, you know, look, it reinforced to me that I didn't think Adelaide were going to be much chopped this year. And certainly I didn't think Sydney were going to be, but that was still a good performance from them and a disappointing one from Adelaide.
What did you make of the clubs on Sunday? So Hawthorn and Brisbane, you know, and finally Clarko's had a win over Chris Fagan, so he'd be happy, albeit briefly. But they, even the coaches weren't aware of the announcement that had taken place and what was going to happen until the end of the game. How difficult would it have been to be the twilight game on Sunday? Or would it have been, look, we've got one last crack at this, let's make it, give it everything we've got? Some said, why did they even bother playing the last game? But I probably think in the interest of a level playing field, they had to.
They absolutely had to, Caro. They had to proceed on the basis that the season will go ahead and the round had to be completed. And I think one of the most interesting questions was posed in the broadcast of Hawthorn and the Brisbane Lions when Lee Matthews, who's had a bit to say, obviously, about the player pay dispute and had some strong words, the question was asked, do you actually tell the players, and this would have been the Brisbane players, that this is the season's over for a while after this, to try and raise a greater effort if you're behind? And yep. Lee felt you don't. But I think it was a fascinating question of the awareness of the players in that game, because it happened in the middle of that game that the season was being shut down.
Well,
and the coaches didn't know either. So nobody was given that opportunity. I think the other question about what happens going forward, and I think this is legitimate, is we've said goodbye to a lot of players before we really knew we were doing so. Do you agree with that, Glees?
Potentially. Yeah, potentially. There'll be players that are playing their last season that won't get, if the season doesn't get back, of course, that's it. It's, you know, they'll be tempted to go around again because they feel like they've been it's been robbed from them. But that's the bigger question is, will we get back? And that's not going to be answered for some time. I think that the one about how difficult is it to get out there and play, we can also, you know, what's the mentality of players? That can partly be read by the boneheads from North Melbourne that decided to have a party at their house after the game on Sunday night and invited some Essendon players over as well. They were treating it like a Mad Monday. They thought the season's done, well, let's just get on it.
They weren't the only ones.
No.
Mark Blixarves has been exposed for holding a party. He also had police visit his house. Too much noise, too many people. Even his teammate Patrick Dangerfield admitted that was a really dumb thing to do. But I have some sympathy for those players because we're getting mixed messages everywhere from the federal government down about what
true.
We can and can't do. And the players were being told it's all right to jump all over each other. And Luke Beveridge talked about this last Friday night. The AFL didn't like what he said, but he sort of made a reasonable point. I mean, why are we playing if we're not allowed to shake hands? We're sending a message anyway by playing that it's all right to go near each other. And so those players would be thinking, well, we're allowed to jump all over each other. Why the hell can't we all get together and have a drink after the game?
It is a period of mixed messages. You can have 11 people at a boot camp, but you can only have 5 at a funeral. So I don't quite know how to attend 5 at a wedding.
Caro, did you feel that there was the fact that so many people wanted the games to be played, this desperation of the public to see games and to see footy in a sort of nuclear winter of our lives, there was something sort of dystopian. I compared it to the Hunger Games. We almost wanted something. It's just extraordinary, really. If you step back from it and say, we're asking these young men, notwithstanding what you said about the pay, we're asking them to go out there and do this when everything else is closed. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I think you and I applauded the decision, Jake, last week. Our colleague Greg Baum wrote a brilliant column going against our opinion, and I didn't agree with it, but it was a very good column, and he'll continue to lead us through all of this with his beautiful stuff. But I honestly now say I was wrong. I mean, I was one of those people. I was not blinded by the fact, but, you know, Richmond Carlton is a date I put in my calendar in October every year. And I was so looking forward to it. And I blindly sort of felt that if it went ahead, that maybe life wouldn't be all that different. I now realise that life is going to be completely different in so many different ways. And I only had to sit at the MCG on my own in the members to realise that I had been completely wrong in thinking it was the right decision.
I think though that we had to see it to know that. That would be an argument I would mount. So I think they had to try it to see what it looked like. Now we know what it looks like. But here's a problem, Caro. If what you say is right, can we resume the season without crowds? Logically, can we have a season without crowds for the sake of the survival of the game and the clubs? Can we go ahead and do that now? That's the logical next question.
Yep, and I've thought about this, and I think that we have seen it. We know it won't be the same. It will only come back now when the lockdown rules become less stringent, and maybe that'll be June, maybe that'll be July, maybe that'll be August. I think there is still a view that there will be every effort made to try and get this season underway if it can. But by the time they make that decision, people will presumably be allowed to gather in bigger groups to have more people at a funeral, and therefore I think we'll be pretty happy to accept a gradual re-entry of the game back into our psyche. And if that means without crowds, yes, it won't be the same, but it will be better than nothing.
Okay, question for both of you. How late can it go before the season is called off? How late can you recommence the season and get it completed? Either this year or before next season starts?
August. You can't start the season, obviously, in September.
So start of August or end of August?
Sorry, Glees?
The start of August or the end of August?
Start of August.
So you've got to play all of August, September?
October, November.
They've told the clubs that they'll give them 30 days notice of recommencing the season. That would have them, Jake, deciding at the start of July that they're prepared to say, we will be ready to go in a month's time. And June is supposed to be the peak. That's what we're all being told, that June will be the peak for the coronavirus in Australia. So can you really envisage at the start of July being ready to say you'll be okay to go in a month?
Well, I can't. I cannot see footy in being started any earlier than July at the earliest. I don't think it'll happen in June. There's no chance it'll happen in June. Next to no chance. I think July is the absolute earliest, but August is more likely if it happens at all.
And that will be another interesting question going forward. All the talk about five-day breaks and all the talk about travel and how tough it is on the players, we'll see just how easy it is once everyone has the same opinion that we need to get these games played. We will have bigger squads. Jobs will be resumed, or some jobs will be, and everyone will do everything they can to get this happening.
I wouldn't rule out, Caro, either a season without a result. I think the AFLW, we haven't even touched on the fact that that's gone without a premiership. I wouldn't be surprised that the economic imperatives of keeping the show on the road for jobs and club survival and game survival will override the idea that you have to have a season completed.
I disagree with that. I think they'll only start the season if they know they can get to a result. I mean, there's no point going to a game if there's no end game. The final series won't look like it ever has before, but you won't start footy unless there is a final series.
Well, would it be a final series? I mean, if we're cutting the season to 17 rounds, do we cut the finals back and it's a top six? Or, you know, is it why do we have a final series as it stands? Is it a top four and you just play prelim finals, grand finals?
Well, if time becomes the imperative, then yes. But I think it's more likely that they'll squeeze in those games from July, late July, or even mid-August, I reckon, Jake. And then the finals could even have an extra week added to them. And that's more games for the broadcasters, I guess.
You could have a radical idea. I don't think this will happen, but you'd have a radical idea of no finals and you just have a 17-game season. You declare the winner like the English Premier League. I don't think that'll happen. I think finals are so entrenched. Finals without crowds would be also very dispiriting to me.
These aren't questions that are going to be resolved today, but they are questions we're going to continue to ask and try to answer as the season goes on. But that's all we have time for. So do keep up with all of the footy news on realfooty.com.au. Thanks for joining us, Caro and Jake.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Jake. Stay healthy. Stay inside when you can. And plenty more to talk about next week as we assess the fallout of this terrible nightmare.
Thanks also to Channel 7 and Fox Footy for the audio we've used in this episode. Thanks, everyone, and wash your hands.